This is James Temple, Senior Editor for Energy at MIT Technology Review. I recently spoke with Harvard professor David Keith about his research into geoengineering, exploring whether there are ways we could alter the climate itself to reduce the risks of global warming. We've invited Professor Keith to discuss this topic and other ways of addressing climate change at our annual MTech MIT conference in Cambridge this November. I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation then. In the meanwhile, here are some highlights from our recent discussion. Why is it time to move forward with geoengineering field trials?
I think it's time to move forward with a broad research program on solar geoengineering, one that is open access and international and transparent. And that's because there is a real chance, we don't know, that it might be able to substantially reduce climate risk this century. But it raises hard governance challenges, and we don't know the risks or how well it works. And we need to know that so we can give the information, in a sense, to the next generation so they can make good decisions. That's the fundamental reason to have a research program. And in a sense, we need to do what the National Academy and many other bodies have clearly told the scientific community they ought to do, which is do some real research. The answer as to why do outdoor experiments is because that's a normal part of research. In any kind of environmental research, you have to do a mixture of building careful theoretical models and then going out and making careful controlled experiments to understand where those models go wrong. The big issue here is really to understand how we're wrong, and you do that ultimately by setting up carefully controlled experiments that are quantitative, where you can see errors in your prediction. And again, from my point of view, it's wrong to think about this as a trial of geoengineering. So what a field trial would mean to me is that you had the full system you wanted to deploy, and you were beginning to deploy it in some trial mode to see if it worked. That is absolutely not what we're doing. So I think at this point it's much too early to think about engineering a complete system for deployment. I would oppose that. We're trying to do science to help us understand how well some solar geoengineering ideas might work, how they might fail, what their risks might be.
So even geoengineering critics, or at least credible geoengineering critics, I guess, seem to agree that the scale of the trials being discussed don't pose any significant environmental risk. But one of the main criticisms that remains, and the one that you hear a lot about, is the idea of moral hazard, or I think the term you prefer is risk compensation. This basic idea that people and policymakers will see these serious, well-credentialed scientists doing this work and say, oh, well, they've got this. And then, therefore, we don't need to take greenhouse gas reductions as seriously. What is what's your response to that argument?
So first of all, it's important to say that that argument doesn't apply to experiments any more than it does to speech. So I think at some level, it's a realistic risk that if the scientific community overstates the case that solar geoengineering really could work, there is a chance that it'll be used politically to weaken efforts to cut emissions. So I think that's a sensible thing to worry about. But I don't think there's any bright line between a small science experiment and, say, a movie or a big public talk, or for that matter, the former chief advisor to the Secretary General starting a major effort on governance. All those things are things that make this look more serious. And I don't think these concerns apply in a special way to experiments which, in some sense, don't physically do anything different than existing scientific experiments. Okay. The question of how seriously to take the moral hazard argument, I mean, in thinking about the moral hazard argument, you have to weigh two things. Yes, there is some legitimate possibility that it would reduce commitments to cut emissions, but there's also some possibility that it could substantially reduce climate risks over this century. And in the end, we don't make the decision on either thing. This is about giving more information to the next generation that will make the serious decisions about this, not us.
Okay. I thought you made an interesting point in your book on this issue. You basically said that the moral hazard argument is probably correct, as you're just saying, that it could discourage emissions reduction to some degree, but that we should pursue research anyways because the risks of climate are so high, and specifically those risks, which can be kind of treated as a sort of an abstraction in the moral hazard argument, are basically boiled down to a lot of death and destruction in poor countries. Can you sort of explain that point?
Sure. One of the reasons I'm particularly interested in developing the possibility of solar geoengineering is it does appear that the benefits are most felt by the poorest. And that's because the biggest climate impacts, particularly impacts from extreme heat and extreme precipitation events like tropical cyclones, those impacts fall on the world's poorest. And there's now pretty clear evidence that solar geoengineering would be remarkably effective in reducing some of those risks. And the relative benefits actually go more to the poor than to the rich. And so I think there's something really kind of important about that. And for me, it's a fundamental ethical reason that we do need to develop the technology to do it, and that we need to engage deeply with people in the developing world in getting their input into what this development looks like and in diffusing the technology. I mean, this may be being developed here, but it's open access. And I don't actually think it's likely that the U.S. will be a country that deploys. I think it's much more likely to be poor countries.
I think the argument that resonates the most with me, not against research, but against eventual deployment, is just the idea that the climate system is massive and complex and uneven, and we know our climate models aren't perfect. So we might be pretty sure it will work, and we might be pretty sure that the negative consequences won't be that bad or can be limited, but we can't really know for sure what the full effects will be. So I'm curious with you yourself, yeah, as you get to this point, to the point of deployment in your own imagination, does that give you pause?
Yes, but I think that you have to think both sides of the argument through. So suppose you're making a decision to deploy or not to deploy. Where to me, to be clear, deployment doesn't mean you flip a massive switch and turns it on. It means you start slowly to do it. So if you don't do it, then you have the what's called radiative forcing, which is the cumulative effect of all that CO2 in the atmosphere pushing the climate. You have a given level of radiative forcing. The units are watts per square meter. So maybe with a given profile of CO2 emissions, you have 4 watts per square meter. That's the fundamental thing that pushes the climate. And we can't tell what the climate response will be very well for a given amount of radiative forcing. So we don't know what will happen with that CO2 in the air. If we do solar geoengineering, we know we have lower total radiative forcing. Let's say we have 3 instead of 4 watts per square meter. We also don't know for sure what the response will be. We have uncertainty in both sides. But the question is, which uncertainty is larger? And a kind of most obvious scientific answer, balance of evidence, is that the uncertainty goes up with the total radiative forcing. The harder you push the climate system, the more you get these unexpected, nonlinear, frightening outcomes. And so, yes, it's true that we don't know for sure what the response to solar geoengineering is. We never will. But we also don't know what the response to CO2 is, and we never will. And the issue is, which combined state of the world is less risky? And the combined state of the world with whatever CO2 we peak at, and to be clear, I'm all for cutting emissions and making that peak as low as possible, but wherever that peak is, the question is, would you rather have that peak alone and not know for sure what's going to happen, or have that peak alone and a little bit of solar geoengineering so there's a little less total climate forcing? And we'll never know. Both are uncertain, but it sure looks like it's less risky to have a little bit of solar geoengineering.
Since it always is and always will be this kind of risk-to-risk decision, does that ultimately mean that full-scale deployment doesn't make sense out of the context of unfolding disasters? I mean, is this something, or at least being kind of right up to the edge of what we think is about to be an unfolding disaster?
Climate is a slow-moving beast, so there will be individual things that are locally disasters, like Category 5, and now it might be possible with enough CO2 to get Category 6 hurricanes, or a heat wave that kills thousands or tens of thousands of people. Those things, when you're in them, are disasters. But all that climate change or solar geoengineering does is alter the probability of those things slowly and gradually over time. And so while there are kind of political tipping points, it's not so obvious there really are strong physical tipping points in the overall Earth's climate. So I in general, I think if you're going to use solar geoengineering, it makes more sense to begin using it very slowly and gently so you can look for errors as you and look for problems as you gradually increase it, and you can begin to reduce risks slowly. So I don't think it's that useful as an emergency response. But at some level, I don't really know what a climate emergency is. It's partly just a effective turn of speech.
Even if that's the best route scientifically to take, is it is the thing I just described the more likely politically feasible thing?
Yeah. So the way politics works in democracies and at some level globally, I think, is you get these things kind of moving along under the surface where some subset of the elite has a set of different issues around tax reform or obscure pieces of IP reform or solar geoengineering, and those things kind of stay beneath the surface with people fighting their turf wars and thinking about different regulatory systems. And then some event suddenly brings it to the surface, and then the politicians act. You know, so if you're talking about, you know, school bus safety, maybe there's some perfectly good arguments, but then one day there's an awful school bus accident, and that happens to be then when legislators act. So I'm sure the same will be true here, that action about solar geoengineering is likely to be triggered by some kind of big event, like a massive killing heat wave. But that doesn't mean the action is just a panic response to that event. It's partly just the way politics works. And what I hope, and the reason to have research, is that there will be as much background knowledge as possible to make informed decisions when that happens.